Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Samach Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah, 10 lines from the bottom of Daf Samach Aleph. Before we begin the actual Mishnah, let us first glance in the margin where we have a Nosei, which is a topic heading, and we also indicate that this discussion goes till Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. So we will be involved during today's shiur with this topic, as we indicate, practically till the end of the shiur at the Mishnah on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. The topic is Tanai Kofel. Tanai is a condition, a stipulation that one makes when entering into an agreement. Kofel literally means doubled. For our purposes, it means stating the condition in the positive and in the negative. In other words, if you do such and such, then such and such. If you don't do such and such, then such and such. She'elois mafteach. The key questions that we will have to deal with in this section, ma melamed hakfilus b'farshas b'nei God u'v'nei Ruvain. The Parshas B'nei God B'nei Ruvain is a reference to a section in the Torah, Bamidbar Perek Lamed Beis, where the tribes of God and Ruvain, having had very large animal stocks, herds and flocks that required vast grazing areas, so upon the entrance to Eretz Yisrael, they had the calculation, the realization that it would be for their benefit to remain on the eastern bank of the Jordan and not cross into Eretz Canaan proper, the region designated to be divided amongst the tribes. But in their considering thusly that they would remain on the eastern side of the Jordan, what would be their role with regard to the conquest, the battles, the wars that would have to be fought upon entrance to the land of Israel? Would they simply remain on the in the already conquered east bank and not assist the rest of their fellow Jews in the conquest of the mainland? So the issue of B'nai God, B'nai Ruvain, as it appears in the Torah, you will see appears in a stipulation form where conditions are made. If they agree to cross into the land and fight and help conquer the land for the rest of their Israelite brethren, then they'll be entitled to their exclusive claims of the land masses on the eastern side of the Jordan that were already conquered. If they do not go into the land and assist their fellow tribesmen, then they will not get what they desire. What will they get? That remains to be seen. In other words, if they opt not to assist the rest of their fellow tribesmen in the conquest of mainland Israel, then what will they get, if anything? The question then is, when we look in the Torah and we see the condition that's presented to the B'nai Gad or B'nai Reuven, stated in a doubled form, what are we to learn from that? Number one, L'Rebbe Meir. Number two, L'Rebbe Chanina. Rebbe Meir is of the opinion that we don't apply, we don't accept a principle known as Michlal Lava to Shemehain. In English, we might refer to it by one word, inference, or drawing inference. When stating a condition, is it sufficient to say, we'll say, the positive, and I can draw my own conclusion by inferring? In other words, if you help me in carrying the box, then I will give you a reward. Could you not infer from that, if you do not help me in carrying the box, you will not get a reward? Is it necessary to spell that out? According to Rebbe Meir, it is necessary to spell it out. We do not rely, when stating conditions, we do not rely on simply drawing an inference from that which was stated. But you have to spell it all out, the positive and the negative. And that is what Rebbe Meir derives from this section in the Torah called the Tanai B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. Rebbe Chanina, he appears in the Mishnah, Rebbe Chanina ben Gamliel, disagreeing with Rebbe Meir, and says that in general, you can draw an inference. What then does Rebbe Chanina ben Gamliel do with the fact that the conditions concerning these two tribes is, the conditions are stated in a double fashion, in positive and negative fashion? What am I to derive from that? And another issue, Ma hoyinu choshvim b'li hakfilus, L'Rebbe Meir, L'Rebbe Chanina. What would I have thought without the doubling, the statement in the positive and the negative? What would have been had you left me to draw an inference? And we have to ask this question according to Rebbe Meir and according to Rebbe Chanina. Before we start the actual text, I think there is a certain amount of value in simply reading the psukim that are most directly related to the Gemara. There are more psukim, there's more background story, but for our purposes, we see in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Choftes, after Moshe Rabbeinu had his discussion with those specific tribes, and then their subsequent agreement that they will go and fight in the land of Israel, hoping to get, as a result, their requested eastern bank land masses. The Pasuk says, Pasuk Choftes, Bamidbar Perek Lamed Beis, Vayomer Moshe Aleihem, Im Yavru B'nei Gad U'B'nei Reuven Itchem Es HaYarden, and Moshe here is addressing Elozer, the Kohen, the Kohen Gadol, and Yoshua, who is going to lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel, and the other heads of the tribes. And Moshe said to them, we'll call them the leaders, Im Yavru B'nei Gad U'B'nei Reuven Itchem Es HaYarden, Kol Cholutz LaMilchom L'fnei Hashem V'nich B'Sharetz L'fneichem, if the tribes of Gad and Reuven cross over the Jordan River into the mainland Israel and serve as soldiers in battle to conquer the land, Unasatem Lohem Es Eretz HaGilod Lachuzo, you will then give to them. Eretz HaGilod is a reference to the eastern bank land masses as their holding. Pasuk Lamed, and now you see in the negative, it says V'im Lo Yavru Chalutzim Itchem, and if they don't cross over as soldiers together with you, V'Nochazu B'Soichichem Be'eretz Kenoan, then they will receive a holding, a portion amongst you in the land of Canaan. In other words, no receipt of what they actually desired, the eastern bank land masses. So as we read Psukim Chof Tes and Lamed, you can see what's called a Tanai Kofel. In Pasuk Chof Tes it said, Im Yavru, if they do cross over. And in Pasuk Lamed, Im Lo Yavru, and if they don't cross over. There are more points, more halachic issues that can be derived from these Psukim, as we will see in the Gemara. I should say the Gemara and Rashi. Rashi adds a great amount to this particular sugya, as we will see. So now, we're ready to turn to the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Tnai, any condition, She'eno, Kitnai b'nei Gad u'vnei Ruvain, that's not stated in the doubled fashion, as we saw with the tribes of Gad and Ruvain, Eino Tnai. It's not an accepted condition. In other words, the contents of the condition will be void, and the action or the result will remain. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayomer aleim im yavru b'nei God uvnei Ruvain." That was pasuk of Tes. Uksiv v'im lo yavru chalutzim. That was pasuk Lamed. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tzorech Hadover Lomro, there is a necessity in stating it in the negative, Shil Mole Kain, if not for the statement in the negative, Yesh Ba Mashma, one could have thought erroneously, but one could have come to the following conclusion, Shafil Be'eretz Kanan Lo Yinchalu, that if they don't cross over and fight, they won't get even in the land of Israel. Not only will they lose out in their portion in what they desired on the eastern bank, but they're not even going to get that which they didn't desire, a portion in the land of Israel proper. So according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, the doubling of the condition wasn't as a fulfillment of the laws of making conditions. As far as making conditions, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it's sufficient if you state just one half, just state the positive. If, in this case, if you do cross over, so you will get what you want. And then I could have on my own figured, and if you don't cross over, so then you won't get. However, in this specific case, it had to be doubled. It didn't. And why is that? In order to forestall what would have been otherwise a misunderstanding. Let us look at Rashi, who adds quite a bit to this sukya. Rashi, at the beginning of the Mishnah commentary, you'll see in the middle of the page, Kol Tanai She'ein Kofel, Ketanai B'nei God U'Vnei Ruvain Eino Tanai. V'yaf Alpi Shalo Niskayim HaTanai Niskaimu HaDvorim. Even without the fulfillment of the Tanai, of the condition, if it's not doubled, then nevertheless the result will take hold. Kagon, and let's give a concrete example. Hare ze gitech al menas shetitni li mosayim zuz. A man says, this is your get, this is your divorce, on condition that you give me 200 zuz. Velo piresh lichpol, and he didn't bother doubling it in the negative, im lo titni li, and if you don't give me the 200, lo yeheget, then you won't be divorced. Well, let's say the person did not double that. Ein kan tnai shel mosayim zuz klal. Then, according to Rabbi Meir, there will be no condition involving the 200 zuz. The zuz is a denomination of currency, if you prefer, $200. And the result would be, according to Rabbi Meir, if you don't double the condition, V'afilu lo inosno have a get. Even if she doesn't pay the money, she still will be divorced. In other words, according to Rabbi Meir, if you say, here is your get, on condition that you pay me, you the woman, pay me the husband, 200 zuz, if he doesn't go on to say, and if you don't, etc., then the condition was not stated in proper terms, and therefore, the get will go through even if she does not pay the $200. And the basis of Rabbi Meir is, as we saw by Moshe Rabbeinu dealing with the two tribes of Gad and Reuven, and he doubled and he said, "V'im lo yavru chalutzim itchem v'nochazu b'soichachem shmamino de'ilo kofal." We see from it that had he not doubled the condition, hoiso matonosoi kayemes. Then, even had they not crossed into mainland Israel to help in the war effort, they still would have got their desire, their desired eastern bank landmass. Even though it was stated in the positive, if you cross over and help us fight, then you will get your desired eastern landmass. Why, even if they wouldn't have crossed over and helped, would they have got their desired landmass? Because leslon, according to Rabbi Meir, we do not hold from michlal heinat to shemel lav. That michlal means, in this case, inferring from the positive, you can derive the negative. So since we don't rely on inference, then they would have gotten what they wanted anyway, even had they not crossed over and helped in the war effort. How is it then that they need to get in, they need to go in and help with the war effort? Because the condition was doubled. It was stated in the positive and the negative, making it into a binding condition. Namely, the condition being the help in the war effort. If you help us in the war, that becomes a binding condition in order to get the result, i.e., possession of the eastern landmass. Rashi continues with more information regarding laws of making conditions. V'udinami deboinon. Furthermore, we require in making a condition and stating condition tanai kodem lemaisa, the condition stated before the outcome. Midalo Omar, from the fact that he did not say tenu lohem, give them their desired landmass, im yavru, if they cross over. If they cross over is the condition. Mashma dimomar hochi, it appears then, had he said it this way, lo osi tno umavatel maise de matona de kadme, the condition would not have been powerful, would not have been effective in canceling their desired landmass, their desired gift. Fishamino nami, and a third point we derive from Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, hein kodem lav, positive before the negative. The lo omar tchilo, he didn't say, Moshe Rabbeinu did not say at the outset, im lo yavru al titnu v'im yavru nesatem, if they don't cross over, then don't give them, and if they do, then give them. But rather it was said in the opposite order. If they do cross over, that's the tnai, that's the condition, then give them their desired landmass, that's the action, they're receiving of the landmass. And if they don't cross over, stated in the second position, then they will not receive what they want. We continue in the Rashi, who, as we said, adds a lot of information here. Rabbi Chanina Omar, Atnai Kofu L'chudei Polig. Rabbi Chanina comes to argue only with regard to the need for doubling the condition. This is Rashi's approach to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Tosfos happens to disagree with this approach, but for our purposes, we're going to continue with the Rashi. Rabbi Chanina comes into the picture to disagree with Rabbi Meir only on the point of the need for doubling, i.e., Rabbi Chanina holds you don't need to double the conditions. Lemeimar, di ain't sorach lichpo, you don't need to state it in the double form. De mechlal hein nishmalav. According to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, you can infer from the positive to the negative. So why in the Torah do we see Moshe Rabbeinu doubling the conditions? Mishum tzorech hoyadover lomro, because it was necessary to state the negative. Mitnei dover acher, because of an outside consideration. Shilmolei kein shekoflo, if not for Moshe Rabbeinu's doubling, had he left it in, had he left it up to us in order to infer, yesh b'mashma, there was room to conclude, she'im lo yavru, if they wouldn't have crossed over into Eretz Canaan to help in the war effort, af b'Eretz Canaan, she'mevir hayardin v'holo, then even in Eretz Canaan itself, which was from the river onwards, westward, shehayu kutzin ba mipnei mikne rafsim, they had no desire. Kutzin is a word meaning they had disdain for. They had no use for the land of Canaan itself. Why? Because it didn't provide nearly enough landmass for their large herds and cattle, herds of cattle. Af, so it the had the condition not been doubled, one and one left to inference, you could have come out saying that if they wouldn't go over and help in the war effort, then they're not going to get anything. They're not going to get in the they're not going to get even the land of Canaan, a portion of land of Canaan that they really had no desire for in the first place, and certainly not that which they did desire. Thusly, according to Rabbi Chanina, we would have derived things. Im yavru unesadlem eseres hagilod b'shvil kol chilkom. If they cross over into the land of Israel and help in the war effort, then they will get the entire Eretz Gilad as their exclusive portion. Ha im lo yavru, if they don't cross over, I would have inferred, had it not been stated explicitly, the following. You niknosin v'luchelek lokan v'lokan kral. They are to be fined and receive nothing, not in the land of Israel proper, and certainly not in the area that they desired. In other words, they'd be left with nothing. Well, that is not the conclusion that we want you to draw. But if I were left on my own, that's what I would have come out thinking. Lekach piresh shim lo yavru. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu spelled out that if they do not cross over and help the rest of the tribes in their conquest of the land, lo yafsidu chelkom bekach, they're not going to lose their portion because of that. And what would be v'yitlu kan v'kan al pi goro? If they don't cross over, the result is that through the drawing of through the lots that were used in dividing the land, they would get a portion on the eastern bank and a portion in the land of Israel. That is why it needed to be doubled, simply to dispel what I would have erroneously thought, namely, had I inferred, if they don't go over, then I would have erroneously concluded that they get nothing. Therefore, it was necessary, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, to spell out the positive and the negative, but it becomes a necessity only in their case, but not as a general precedent for establishing conditions in all kinds of deals. I want to emphasize a detail that, if we're successful in remembering it later on, it will be of great value in the Gemara. And that is, at this point, but subject to change, and I emphasize that emphatically, subject to change, at this point, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, had the condition not been doubled by the Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, one would have thought, through inference, that had they not gone into the land of Canaan proper and help in the war effort, they would get nothing. Not here nor there, not in the land of Israel proper, nor on the eastern bank either. That is what I would have thought had I been left up to simply inferring from the positive what would have been the result in the negative. Later, that is going to change as far as Rav Chanina, as far as our understanding Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is concerned. In the meantime, we turn to the Gemara, who says, Shapir Komalei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Chanina is making a strong point here, namely, that in the case of Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, the doubling was necessary so as to preempt the misunderstanding that I would have concluded, having been left on my own to rely on inference. As a result, how does Rabbi Meir see here a source for general condition making? Omar Loch Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir answers, as we go on in the Gemara, marking wise, I just want to say that you'll see the use of this squiggle underline for the next several lines, highlighting the name of the speaker, what each one says. So Rabbi Meir says, "E salka daitoch lav litnai kofel hu de'asa." If the Torah was not coming to teach me the necessity of doubling stated conditions in all cases, and the Torah's interest was only to dispel, like Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said, a local misunderstanding, then lichtoiv, it would have been enough for the Torah to write it as posuk lamed, ve'em lo yavru ve'no chazu besochachem. Be'eretz Canaan lomo li. Why does the Torah add the words Be'eretz Canaan? And that is what you can see when you look at Posuk Lamed, which had said, Vim lo yavru chalutzi mitchem, v'nochsu besochachem, and then it's the words are added, Be'eretz Canaan. So as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, if the only purpose of the Torah was to dispel a misunderstanding or a wrongful conclusion, having been left to our own drawing of inference, it would have been enough to write V'im lo yavru v'noichsu b'sechichem. What do we gain, or what does the Torah want by adding the words Be'eretz Canaan? So Rabbi Meir concludes from this, as you can see on the top of Omid Beis, after the Gemara says, Be'eretz Canaan loma li, Shema Mino, on the top line of Omid Beis, it says, we see from here, L'tanai kofel hu diosa, those extra words teach me that I need to double conditions in general. Once again, we're going to learn the Rashi, who is quite helpful here. The Rashi on the beginning of the Gemara, Shapir Ko'omer Le, Kushiyahi, Rashi tells us a structural note. And that is that the opening of the Gemara, when it says Shapkum Le Rabbi Chanina, we're presenting really a question. How does Rabbi Meir really learn that you need to double conditions? Shapir Ko'omer Le Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina is saying, Shapir means saying, well, he has a strong point, the Kfeilo Lavla Michbalosa. The Kfeil, the doubling, is not to tell me that you have to double conditions. Shelo Yitlu Eretz Gilad Kula. Daha Michlola Shamin on law. As far as the need for doubling, it's not double. The condition isn't double to tell me that, well, if they don't go over, then they won't get all of Eretz Gilad. Gilad is the eastern bank landmass. The whole Michlola Shamin on law, that we could have figured out on our own. Elo Lameimar, V'nochsu Eretz Kanan, Afilu Ein Oivrim Lemochama. What the doubling does, according to Rabbi Chanina, is to tell me that even if they don't help in the war effort, they nevertheless will get a portion, a section in Eretz Canaan proper. Without the doubling, I would have thought that if they don't cross over, then even in the land of Canaan, they will get nothing. Let's continue in the Rashi. Omar loch Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Meir responds to Rabbi Chanina, says, Isalka daita krol lefrushi osa, if, as you think that the Pasuk is coming to spell out, afilu lo yavru lehafsilu chelkem b'chol eretz Yisrael, that even if they don't cross over and help in the war effort, they're not going to lose thereby their portion in the land of Israel proper. The lav letnai kofel osa lahachsikis etnai shim lo yavru lo tehe matnas gilod matona. And if, as you think, the doubling is not to teach me that you need to have a tenai kofel to strengthen the condition, to tell me that if they don't cross over, then the desired section of Gilad will not be theirs. Vashmin and Demichlal Hain I Atashame Alav im Eino Mefarsho. Lichtov, Rashi goes on to say, Lichtov v'im lo yavru v'nosu b'sochachem. According to you, Rabbi Chanina, if the purpose of the doubling is to dispel a wrongful conclusion, it would have been enough to write, v'im lo yavru v'nosu b'sochachem v'al korcho choyisim mefarsho shim lo yavru lo yafsidu bal lamdenu. That if they don't cross over, they won't lose out. What then was the necessity of having the Torah add the words Be'eretz Canaan? So Rabbi Meir sees from that the general necessity of doubling conditions. The Rashi at the top says, Lomali Be'eretz Canaan. Why the words Eretz Canaan? Demashma mi'uta. It sounds that there is a limitation. Limute shelo yitlu be'eretz Gilad keneged chelkom shebe'eretz Canaan, that they are not going to get in Eretz Gilad a corresponding portion to what they receive in the land of Israel. Even though the suggestion when you see parentheses is not to read its contents, here I want to read what you see in the parentheses. Hare mashmanami mi venochsu besochachem. From the words venochsu besochachem, I can figure shelo yitlu be'eretz gilod keneged chelkom shebe'eretz Yisrael. Elakro yiseirahu lemedrash beit nai kofel. The words be'eretz Canaan are really extra words from which to derive that you need to double conditions. Shma mino hutzrich lichpol v'loimar im lo yavru lo yehe bedvorai klum. For Moshe Rabbeinu to say that if you don't cross over, then there is nothing of there's nothing in my words. The I lo koflo hoiso matanoso kayemes, had it not been doubled, says Rabbi Meir, then the gift of land would have been so, even had they not crossed over. The Mechlal Hain lo nishmalav. From the positive, we do not derive the negative. We turn back to the Gemara, having heard Rabbi Chanina's proof, and now hearing Rabbi Meir's response, that the basis of his need for doubling conditions is strictly from the words Be'eretz Kanan that seem to be added to the Pasuk. In other words, Rabbi Meir is sensitive to the wrongful conclusion that one might have reached had he been left on his own to draw an inference. So that itself could have been accomplished without adding the words Be'eretz Kanan. Now that those words are added, I see that you need to have a Tanai Kufel. For Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, what's his response to that? Ilo kosav rachmona Be'eretz Kanan, had the Torah not written Be'eretz Kanan, I still would have been left with a wrongful local conclusion. Have amina, I on my own would have thought v'noichsu b'sechachim, that phrase equals Be'eretz Gilad, that they will get a holding of land, a portion, namely if they don't cross over, they will get a mere portion in the Eretz Gilad, which was a landmass that was already conquered by all of Israel. So they, as being members of the warring party that helped conquer Eretz Gilad, they'll get a portion of that. Aval Eretz Kanan, klal lo, but they'll get nothing in Eretz Kanan if they don't cross over. So in order to undo that erroneous conclusion, you have to add the words Be'eretz Kanan. But not for the purpose of teaching me in general the need for doubling conditions. For Rabbi Meir, what's Rabbi Meir's response to that? He says, listen, if you think that the words Be'eretz Kanan are to suggest that they'll get a portion in the land of Canaan, even if they don't cross over, that was already implied by the word besoichechem. Kol hecho de isluchu mashma. The word besochechem would have conveyed that idea that they're not going to lose out in a portion in Eretz Yisrael proper. So if besochechem would have accomplished that, say clarification and forestall a misunderstanding, why then does the Torah add the words Be'eretz Kanan? So Rabbi Meir sees in that. So that's the source for the need in general to double conditions. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Moshe l'madover doime. He wants to create an analogy for the B'nai God and B'nai Ruvain story. So he says, what is their story comparable to? L'odom shoy mechalik nechosov levonov. A man who was dividing his property amongst his children. Omar, and he says, Ploni bini, yirash soda plonis. He says, son number one, you will inherit such and such a field that the father owns. Uploni bini, yirash soda plonis. And number two, son, you will inherit this other field. Uploni bini, and the third son, he says, Yitain mosayim zuz, v'yirash sodeplonis. Pay 200 zuz, and you'll be entitled to a third field. Maybe it's some kind of special field, but you'll be entitled to that if you pay the 200 zuz. The action is paying of the zuz. The action is inheriting the field. The condition is paying the money. So if you pay the money, you will get a third field. V'im lo yitain, and if you don't pay the money, yirash yimechov b'shar nechasim, you'll inherit with your brothers in the other properties. In other words, the third son will have a right to a percentage of the fields that were designated to the first and second sons. Mi goram lo lirash im echov b'shar nechasim? What is enabling this third son to get a portion with his brothers in the other properties? We said that if the third son doesn't pay the money, then he nevertheless will get a percentage in the other properties that the first two sons inherit. What enabled that to happen? Kfelo goramlo, the fact that the condition was stated in the positive and the negative. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is presenting this story as an analogy to what happened with the Bnei Gad Bnei Ruvain. The Gemara asks a question. Notice we have a long question marking. There is a certain lack of parallel. V'halo damya moshol l'masnisin. This moshol with the three sons is not parallel to the Mishnah. Hasam katani, in the Mishnah it said, yesh b'mashma, meaning if the condition had not been stated in the double fashion, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said, and by the way, take note of the arrow that indicates to look back to Omid Aleph. This was in at the end of the Mishnah. What did Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel say? He says that if the Tanai had not been doubled, if I would have been left to my own design, if I would have been left to infer on my own, yesh b'mashma sha'afilu be'eretz kenan lo yinchalu. Notice we dashed underlined the word sha'afilu. It would have implied that even in the undesirable, through their eyes, of course, the undesirable eretz kenan itself they won't get. When we say even there, that means certainly in Eretz Gilad, in the eastern bank, which they desired, they will certainly not get. So the Kefel, according to Rabbi Chaim Gamliel in the Mishnah, suggested that without the Kfelus, with leaving me to inference alone, I would have concluded had they not gone in to fight, they would have received nothing. Almok feilo le'eretz gilod nami mahani. We see that the doubling had the effect to enlighten us, to instruct us, that if they would not go into the land of Israel and fight, then they will get a portion, not all of it, but a portion, a percentage, even in Eretz Gilad. Without the Kefel, I would have thought they get nothing. V'hochi kotoni. Correction. V'hocho kotoni. And yet in the analogy above with the three sons, it said, Mi goram lo lirash im echov bishar nechasim. What enabled the third brother to get a portion in the other properties? Kfelo goram lo. Alma, kfelo, the doubling of the condition in the three sons' case, l'shar nechosim hu dekomahani. It had benefit in enabling that third son to get a portion in the other nechosim. In order to appreciate this more, we take a look at the Rashi. Let us now look at Rashi. Dibur HaMasu L'madov HaDoime. The Rashi is commenting on the Braisa that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel had presented to illustrate what the B'nai God and B'nai Reuven could be compared to. So Rashi says, L'madov HaDoime V'chule, Kach Shar HaShvotim Yitlu Eretz Kinaan Ushne Shvotim Elu Yavru Es Hayarden LaMilchama. The two tribes, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, in the positive sense, would cross over to join in the war effort. Tahainu, and that is analogous to Dumil Diyitain Lohem Mosayim Zuz V'yitlu Eretz Hagilad. The Braisa gave the analogy of three sons. The third son would pay the 200 zuz and get his special portion. So the B'nai God and B'nai Reuven, if they cross over, which is like the paying of the 200 zuz, they, the B'nai God and Reuven, would get Eretz Gilad, which is like that third son getting his special portion. V'im lo yavru, lo yafsidu chelkom b'Eretz Kanaan. And if the two tribes, B'nai God and B'nai Reuven, do not cross over and join the war effort, they won't lose out in their portion within the land of Israel proper. Dahainu, the land of Israel proper, is parallel to Sha'ar Nechasin. That third son, in the event that he doesn't pay the 200 zuz, will get a portion of the other properties. Rashi continues. Actually, before we go over the Rashi, we have on the side, right next to this Rashi, you'll notice a starred note where we simply wrote out the parallels. Aleph, Yavru Yarden, then they get Eretz Gilad. And that was parallel to the Yitain Mosayim Zuz. So the third son gets Sode Plonis. In the negative, Im Lo Yavru, if B'nai God B'nai Reuven do not cross over, then Lo Yafsidu Chilkom B'Eretz Kanaan. They won't lose their portion in the land of Canaan, Eretz Israel proper. Im lo itain the motayim zuz, we saw by the brothers, if the third brother doesn't pay the 200 zuz, lo yafsid chelkoi b'shar nechosim, he will not lose out his portion in the other properties. We continue in the Rashi. Mi goram lo lito im echov b'shar nechosim. This was at the end of the Braisa. Rabbi Chanan Gamliel said, what caused B'nai God Me'uvain, I should say, what caused the third brother to receive a portion in the event that he doesn't pay the 200 zuz? He nevertheless get a portion in the other properties. K'feilu Gormelo, dim lo kofal, had it not been doubled. In other words, had I been left on my own for inference, to infer, I would have concluded thusly, if he doesn't pay the 200 zuz, he would have then received only in that third field a portion of it, whatever he has coming to him as one of three brothers. But as far as a portion in the other two fields that were designated to the other brothers, he would get nothing. And certainly he won't get in the third field a compensating portion for that which he is not getting in the other two fields. Rather, he'll get only, for simplicity's sake, he'll get only a third of the third field. Af b'nei God u'b'nei Reuven k'feilas advorim gormu lehem lito chelkom b'Eretz Kanaan. The doubling of the condition with b'nei God u'b'nei Reuven helped that they would get a portion in Canaan. Shim lo kofal, had it not been doubled, hoisi oimer, I would have thought as follows. Lo yitlu bo klum, that they would get nothing in Eretz Canaan, elo beretz gilod mashem agiom lo, and all they would get is a percentage of Eretz Gilod, that which is coming to them as part of the rest of Israel. So if the two tribes represent 2/12, we'll say a sixth of Israel, and we're using these simply for these examples of these number examples for just for simplicity purposes, they would have got a sixth of Eretz Gilad. So what does the Kefel help for? The Kefel helps, says Reb Chaim Gamliel, to preempt or to exclude this misunderstanding, the thinking that they, in the event that they don't cross over, they would get only a percentage of Eretz Gilad and nothing in Eretz Canaan. The Gemara, however, asked a question. And the question had been, there's a lack of parallel. And now Rashi goes over it in detail, the lack of parallel between what Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel suggests as an analogy and that which was said, that which he said in the Mishnah. So now the Rashi. Hosom masnisen kotoni. In the Mishnah it said, Shim lo kofal, had the Ktanai not been doubled, lo hoyu noitlin klum, lo kan velo kan, the Bnei God Ubaruvein would have received nothing had they not helped in the war effort. Nothing, not here nor there, not in Eretz Canaan and not in Gilad. Dikomar, because the language had been She'af be'eretz Canaan she'enenu chaviv olehem lo yitlu. It said, even in Eretz Canaan, which they didn't desire, they will not get. Midiktoni she'af, from the expression She'af, even mashma de kol shekein beretz Gilad shebocharu ba, that all the more so in Eretz Gilad that they were desirous of. Hachi garsinan almok feila leretz Gilad nami ahani. From this, you can see that the doubling enabled them to get a portion in Eretz Gilad as well. We continue in the Rashi. V'hocha kotoni, mi goram lo v'chulei. And in the Braisa, it had said, mi goram lo v'chul, etc. Alma, lo ahani, elo ha'eretz Canaan. According to the Braisa, the doubling of the condition helped only with regard to their getting a portion, in the event that they wouldn't cross over, get a portion in Eretz Canaan. The Belav Kfeila, without the doubling, Nami Havu, Shakli Mashemagiyam Beretz Gilad. According to the Braisa, without the Tanai having been doubled, they would have received a portion of Eretz Gilad anyway. Whereas according to the Mishnah, without the doubling, the thinking was they would have received nothing. By the way, you should use your markings in the Rashi. Compare the two triangles where above, Shim lo kofal, it said, lo hoyu notlin klum. And here it said, Balav kfeila, they would have received something in Eretz Gilad. That is the point at which we left off in the Gemara at the end of a question. We go back to the Gemara, and it says, lo kashya. There isn't a difficulty here per se. Ha mekami denemo le Rebbe Meir v'nochsu, ha lebosur denemo le Rebbe Meir v'nochsu. When we had just the Mishnah, we thought that Rebbe Meir was saying that the entire pasuk lamid v'imlo yavru etc. was necessary for teaching me the rule of kfelus, that you need to double. However, when Rabbi Hanina responded to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir eventually said, listen, as far as dispelling a misunderstanding, it would have been enough simply to write, v'im lo yavru v'nochsu b'soichichem. That's Venochsu that the Gemara referred to. So that Rabbi Meir acknowledges that the Ve'imlo Yavru Venochsu V'Sechichem is necessary to dispel a misunderstanding. Prior to that statement in the Gemara, we thought that Rabbi Meir was using the entire pasuk "V'imlo yavru nosu v'sochem" to tell me that you need to have a tanai kofel. That having been said, we now look at Rashi, who spells the answer out in detail. We pick up the Rashi where we left off. Lo kashya masnisin dekotoni she'af, the Mishnah that said even shdemashma the kol shekein beretz gilad, that had the Tanai not been doubled, Rabbi Chanino said, they would have received nothing. Well, under what circumstances did Rabbi Chanino say that? Mekami denem ole Rabbi Meir, before Rabbi Meir said to him, imke nichto v'noichsu. Vavi sova Rabbi Chanino, at that point Rabbi Chanino thought, the kula milsa dorish Rabbi Meir l'tanai kofel, that the entire Pasuk Lamed he was using for the Tanai Kofel necessity. Hilkoch Omar Le, therefore, at that point, Rabbi Chanina said, Shilmole Kain Shekofal Dvorov, if there wouldn't have been any doubling, Yesh Mashma Shaf Beretz Kanan, Lo Yitlu Vakoshekain Bemoka Machoviv Lahem. There would have been room to infer that had they not crossed in, in other words, according to Rabbi Chanina, who does rely on inference, I would have inferred that had they not crossed in, they would have received nothing. Even in Eretz Canaan, they wouldn't get a portion, and certainly in the area that they were desirous of. According to Rabbi Gamliel, from the positive, I would have concluded the negative. Vimlo yavru, and if they wouldn't have crossed over, if they don't cross over, lo titnu lohem es eretz gilad, they don't get the eastern bank, umemelo the eretz kanan lo shakli, and it follows from that that they will not get in eretz kanan either. Taha lo asli lemichbasha, they didn't go to eretz kanan to conquer it. Mind you, in eretz gilad that they participated in conquering, if they don't cross over, they will get nothing. Certainly in the land of Canaan itself, which they weren't going over, certainly they're not going, they didn't go over to conquer it, certainly they would get nothing. So that's what Rabbi Chanina had responded to Rabbi Meir before Rabbi Meir clarified his position. That was at a point at which we thought that Rabbi Meir was using all of Pasuk Lamed to teach Tanai Kofel. Ubraisa de Kotoni, Rashi goes on, the Braisa that said the Lo Ahani Kfela Elo Leretz Canaan, that the doubling enabled Bnei Gad Bnei Ruvain, in the event that they wouldn't cross over, to get in Eretz Canaan. Omri Rabbi Chanino said that, namely the Lo Ahani Kfela Elo Eretz Canaan, Bosu Domerle Rabbi Meir Nichtev Krov Nochsu, Lomali Beretz Canaan. If all the purpose is to dispel a misunderstanding, then it would not have been important to add the words Beretz Canaan. Omar le Rabbi Chanina, Lito Chelik Beretz Canaan Ahani. The words Beretz Canaan is not there to teach me Tanai Kofel. It's there to tell me that in the event that they wouldn't cross over, they get a portion in the land of Canaan anyway. The Ilo Kasve, had Be'eretz Canaan not been written, and I would have been left to infer things on my own. Have Amino Venosu Sechem Eretz Gilad. The pasuk that says Venosu Sechem implies only in Eretz Gilad would they have received a portion, once again, in the event that they didn't join in the war effort in Eretz Canaan proper. So that, as far as the seemingly contradictory response of Rav Chaim Gamliel, it all depends at which point he was speaking. If before Rabbi Meir spoke, so then Rabbi Chanina perceived the role of Pasuk Lamed to dispel the thinking that had they not crossed over, they would get nothing. But after Rabbi Meir clarified his position, saying that I don't really need all of Pasuk Lamed for Tanai Kofel, I just need Beretz Kanan, then Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel said, oh, had there not been a doubling, so I would have thought that they don't get a portion in Eretz Kanan in the event that they don't join the war effort. But in Eretz Gilad, they would have certainly received a portion. After all, that they did help in conquering. The doubling, as far as Rav Chanina ben Gamliel at that point, is to enable them to get a portion in Eretz Kanan, as the words themselves suggest, Eretz Kanan. Rabbi Meir's final response to that had been that, as far as ensuring them a portion in the event that they don't cross over to get part of Eretz Kanan, that was understood in the words, in the word besochichem, because as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, besochichem is wherever they are. We continue in the Gemara. You'll notice now a list or a series of triangles that appear, and there's also a note on the side of the Gemara under the Mivne heading. The triangle with the point facing up, Bishlamo the Rabbi Meir, they will support Rabbi Meir, triangle phrases, and the inverted triangle highlights Bishlamo the Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Where are you going to see an inverted triangle? So you'll see one of those on the top of Samach Beis Omed Aleph, the fourth line from the top, is the appearance of an inverted triangle. Most of the points that are made in the Gemara then are points that would seem to support Rabbi Meir. And what the Gemara will be doing is citing psukim, many psukim, where the pasuk is doubled, and it seems as such that we're not relying on inference. Logically, inference would have been enough. So why are these psukim that we'll see as we go through the Gemara doubled? That is favorable for Rabbi Meir, because the Torah, when it states something in a conditional form, it has to be spelled out in the positive and the negative, which we refer to as kofel. The Gemara. Bishlamo the Rabbi Meir. Things work out well according to Rabbi Meir that says you need to double things. Hainu dichtiv, the posuk in Sefer Bereishis, Perek Dalet, it says, im teitiv, if you correct your ways, if you live positively, se'es, so then you will be able to bear reward. Vim lo seitiv, and if you do not, notice here it's in the negative, if you do not improve your ways, lepesach hatas roveitz, then to the door of sin you will end up lying. This pasuk, of course, appeared after Cain and Hevel had offered their respective sacrifices to the Almighty, and the Almighty did not accept the offering of Cain, and Cain bore an expression of misery. So the Almighty said to him, if you improve your ways, so you will enjoy reward, and if not, so you will bear iniquity. So as far as Rabbi Meir, we understand that when you state a condition, namely in this case, if you improve your ways, then the action, you will get reward. That has to be doubled. And that's why it goes on to say, v'im lo seitiv. Ela la Rabbi Chanina lomali, According to Rabbi Chanino, it says you have a right to draw conclusions through inference. Would it not have been enough for the pasuk to say, "Im Tetiv says, if you improve your ways, then you will bear reward," and then infer on your own without spelling out "Vim Lo Seitiv," etc. The Gemara says, "No, it's necessary to spell things out, because if I were left on my own and infer things, listen to what you would have concluded. Salka daita chamina. I would have thought, im teitiv agra. If you improve your ways, agra means how you get reward. Im lo seitiv. And if you don't improve your ways, so lo agra velo dina. You get no reward, but not necessarily any punishment, not judgment. Kalmash malon, by spelling out the continuation of the pasuk, namely Vim Lo Yseitiv LePesach HaTos Reveitz, Kodesh Baruch Hu is saying, the Almighty is saying, that if you don't improve your ways, you are going to be judged as well. Not just lack reward, but be judged as well. Bishlam Olo Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichtiv, according to Rabbi Meir's approach, so then I appreciate that which it says by Avraham Avinu and Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, who was sent on a mission to seek a wife for Yitzchak. Eventually, we know that was Rivka. And the psukim in Sefer Bereishis, Perek Chof Dalet, you find Avram Avinu spelling out that he obligated Eliezer under oath to go to the family of Avram in the country, in the area known as Haran, to seek out a wife for Yitzchak. And if he doesn't go there, so then he will be, we'll say, bound by an oath, be in violation of the oath. And if he does go there, then he will be cleansed. He'll be free from the oath. So things you can see have to be spelled out, both in the positive and the negative. Let's look at Rashi. Four lines from the very bottom. Bishlamo le Rabbi Meir, diomar michlolo lo shaminon. According to Rabbi Meir, that you cannot rely on inference. Hainu dichtiv, os tinoke meolosi. Then you'll be cleansed from the vow. Lefi sheshbioi, because Abraham originally had bound Eliezer, his servant, by oath. Im lo el beis avi telech, if you do not go to my family's place in Choron, tachul olecha shvua, then you will be bound. The oath will be upon you. Umichlola lo shaminon. According to Rabbi Meir, I am not able to rely on inference to conclude to im telech lo tachul, that if you do go, make the attempt to find a wife there, then you won't be bound by the oath. In other words, you won't be considered having been in violation of any oath, because you did what I wanted you to do. So according to Rabbi Meir, it had to be spelled out. Oz, that which we saw in the Gemara, Oz Tino Kame, see that when you do go to the north, to Haran, to seek out the wife for Yitzchak, then you will be cleansed from, you'll be free from the oath. You will not be subject to have been in violation of any oath. Only as he said originally, that if you do not go and to my family to seek out a wife and try to take from the local maidens, then you will be in violation of the oath. So as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, you don't rely on inference, and hence the necessity of spelling out the other side of things, namely that if you do go, then you'll be free from the oath. According to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, why did Avraham have to spell that out? Was it not obvious at the point that he said to his servant, if you do not go to my family to seek out a wife, then you are going to be bound by the oath? In other words, you will be in violation of my instructions. Is it not clear that by having gone to my family in Choron, by Eliezer's going to Abraham's family to seek out a mate, he is thereby free from the oath? So why does the pasuk spell that out? It's terech. Rabbi Chanina has a response. He says it's necessary. Sakadaita Chamina, without spelling things out, I would have thought, Hecha denicha la ledida velo nicha le ledidu. In the event that the woman, in this case Rivka, was willing to return with Eliezer to Eretz Canaan, and her family was not in agreement, had that been the case, Maisi bal korchaihu, the Eved, the servant Eliezer, would have been expected to bring her against their will. In other words, it would have been enough for her to be willing to go, and that's it. Kamash Malon, the spelling out of the pasuk reveals to us that there is no need for him to operate against their will. In other words, to be exempt or free from the oath, all that was necessary was for Eliezer to make an attempt by reaching Abraham's family in Choron and seeking a mate there. In the event that they would not want to send her back to Eretz Canaan to Yitzchak, he would have been free from the oath. That's what we gain by spelling it out. The Gemara asks, we find Perek Chof Dalet in Brachos, Pasuk Ches, it says, Im loy soive ha'isha lomali, where the pasuk says, and if she doesn't want to go, why does that have to be? What do I learn from that? This pasuk, this question, is a question in how to understand the Chumash Itzterich. I need that pasuk, namely Brachos Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Ches, where Avram says to Eliezer, if she doesn't want to follow you back here, you will be exempt from the oath. The Gemara answers, Itzterich, the spelling out of that information is necessary, Sakadai Techamina, without it I would have thought, Hecha denichaluhu lididu, velo nichalo lidida, where her family would have been willing to cooperate, but she herself would not want to leave them. Naisi bal korcha, the servant of Abraham would have been expected to bring her against her will. Komash malon, Pasuk Ches tells us, no, Avraham Avinu did not expect that of his servant. Bishlamal, the Rebbe Meir, Hainu Dichtiv, Im Bechukosai Teilechu, Vim Bechukosai Timasu. According to Rebbe Meir, that says you need to spell conditions out, the Pasuk has to say, in the positive, if you follow my ways, my Torah teachings, so there will be reward. And if you despise them and do not follow my Torah teachings, then there will be punishment. Elo le Rabbi Chanina Gamliel lomali, according to Rabbi Chanina, that you can rely on inference, would it not have been enough for the Torah to say, if you follow my ways, so then you will get reward? And then infer, if you do not follow my ways, so then you won't. So according to Rabbi Chanina Gamliel, why was it necessary to spell out the negative as well? It's derech. Sakadei techamina im bechukai seitei lechu brocha. Without the pasuk spelling things out, I would have thought that if you follow my Torah teaching, so then you get blessing. And then infer, im bechukai seitei osu, if you despise and disdain my Torah teachings, lo bracha, there will be no bracha, but also velo klola, there won't be any curse either. That's what inference would have led me to think. Komash Malon, by the Torah spelling things out, I discover that not only by despising God's mitzvahs will one lose blessing, he will in addition subject himself to curse. Bishlom Ola Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichti, Vim Toivu, Shmatem, Vechule, Vim Timanu, Umarisem. The Pasuk in Yeshaya, which we feature on the side of the Gemara in the margin, Yeshaya, Perek, Aleph, Pasuk Yutes, which reads, Im Tovu Shmatem, Tuv Horetz Tochelu. If you are willing and listen to my mitzvahs, from the goodness of the land you will eat. And the next Pasuk says, Vim Timanu, if you are resisting umirisem and rebel, cherev teuchlu ki pi Hashem diber, you will consume cherev. The Gemara will explain that section later on, but you see how things have to be spelled out. Hence the Gemara says this works out well according to Rabbi Meir. You have to spell out if you do heed my words, and then if you resist heeding my words. Why do things have to be spelled out? Would it not have been enough simply to say that if you heed my words, so then you will have the benefit of eating the best of the land? And then I would figure, and if you don't heed my God's words, you won't have that. Why does it have to be spelled out? It's derech. It needs to be spelled out, because Sad Ramina, if left on my own and rely on inference, I would have come with the following. I would have come out with the following interpretation. Im tovu, toiva. In other words, that was spelled out. And then I would infer, v'im timanu, if we resist keeping the mitzvahs, lo toiva, but also v'lo ra. Then there won't be good. That's clearly inferable, but I would have also figured there won't be punishment either. There won't be bad. Komash Malon, by spelling things out, I realize that if there's resistance to keeping the Torah and its teachings, not only do you lose out on the good, but one must also suffer the negative. Before the Gemara continues with more questions, Bishlama this one, Bishlama that one, the Gemara interrupts the flow wanting to analyze the pasuk that we cited. So that's what the bracketed section accomplishes. Let's now go right into the bracketed section. We had a pasuk before, and we had written out the psukim on the side of the Gemara, where in pasuk Chof it said, "Vim tmoanum risem cherev teuchlu ki pi Hashem diber." So the Gemara asks, "My," and we continue at the top of Daf Samach Beis, Cherev Teuchlu. What is meant by that, which was found in Yeshaya Perek Aleph Pasuk Chof? Cherev Teuchlu literally means you will consume swords. Omar Rova. What Cherev Teuchlu is a reference to is Milcha Galnisa Nama Desiri Akusha Ubatsli, eating clumps of salt, hard barley bread and onions. The Omamar pas porni chareva b'melach ubtzolim koshim ubtzolim koshim leguf kecharovas. As it has been said, pas porni chareva b'melach is dry baker's bread with salt and onions is koshim leguf is injurious, has a bad or negative effect on the body, like swords. The word cherev, eating of swords, essentially is eating of dry bread with salt and onions. We go back to the discussion. Whose approach seems more likely. Bishlamo the Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, who says we rely on inference. Hainu dichtiv, it says regarding the sota woman, it says im lo shochav isho soch, im lo sotis tumo tachas ishech hinoki. It says if you, as a married woman, did not have intimacy with the other man. True, she went into private, but the sota procedure takes place because we don't know what happened in there. And the Torah addresses her and says that if you did not have actual intimacy with the other man, other than your husband, and you didn't go astray and defile yourself as a married woman, then hinoki, then you will be cleansed. And that's all. That's what all the Torah says. The Torah doesn't say what happens. It says if you did. So that is enough as far as Rabbi Chanina is concerned. There was no need to spell out the what will happen to her if she did experience immorality. Elo Rabbi Meir, Chinoki Miboyale, according to Rabbi Meir, the Pasuk should have spelled out Chinoki means to be strangled, to die. Namely, if you as a married woman had intimacy with another man, then Chinoki, then your punishment is death, which is a capital offense for a married woman to have intimacy with another man. But the Torah didn't spell that out. It didn't say ve'im shochav, if you did have intimacy with the other man, then chinoki. Omar Rabbi Tanchum, chinoki ksiv. Rabbi Tanchum says that in fact it is spelled out by the fact that the Torah chose a rather unusual word to describe what happens if she's innocent. It said hinoki. It didn't say, for example, tichye, you continue living, or some other positive expression like that, but rather it chose this word hinoki, you will be cleansed. The hey and the ches in the Hebrew language through Drashas Chazal are oftentimes interchangeable. So the choice of the unusual word hinoki is also understood as chinoki, as being as dying through chenek. Chenek is strangulation, but means death for our purposes. So that as far as the question we asked on Rabbi Meir, so he has this response. And now, with that in mind, Bishlamo the Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichtiv Hinoki. Now that we know the explanation of the word Hinoki, that works out better for Rabbi Meir. That since you cannot rely on mere inference, and the Torah said what happens if she's innocent, the Torah also spells out what happens to her if she's guilty by the choice of the word Hinoki. That has that double meaning. Hinoki means cleansed, innocent, and chinoki, the punishment for the guilty party. Elo the Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lomali, but according to Rabbi Chanina, that doesn't require doubling. Why did the Torah choose that rather unusual word? It should have said that if you did not if you, the lady, did not have intimacy with the other man, tichye, or some other more common expression. The Gemara answers, itzterich. According to Rav Chanina, it was necessary to use the word chinoki with the implication of chinoki as well. Sakadeita chamina, had we left you to mere inference, I would have thought like this. Imlo shochavi chinoki. If you didn't have intimacy with the other man, so you'll be cleansed. Vim shochav, and if you did, lo chinoki, velo chinoki, elisur biyama. Not cleansing, and not death either, but rather a mere violation of a prohibited act. Chomash Malon by spelling out, by using the unusual word Hinoki, I understand Chinoki as well. And hence the result of her, if she was Shochev, there is death. Bishlamo Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichtiv. According to Rabbi Meir, I understand the psukim in Parshas Bamidbar, in Sefer Bamidbar, there's Parshas Chukas, which deals with the cleansing or the purification of someone who was Tomei Meis. It says, Hu yischata boy bayom ashlish v'mashvihi itar, that if the person who was defiled to the dead receives the sprinkling of the red heifer ash water mixture, and the sprinkling takes place on the third day of his clean days, and the seventh day, we know that a person who was defiled to the dead has a 7-day waiting period where he stays away from any defilement to further dead, and he also receives the sprinkling of the red heifer ash water mixture. That takes place on the third day of that waiting period of that week and the seventh day. The Pasuk says, Ve'im lo yischata v'chulei, and if he doesn't undergo that, etc. and so forth. For our purposes, you can see that the Torah, we've underlined the key phrases, the Torah spells out the positive and the negative. El Rav Chanina ben Gamliel ma lomali, but according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, why does the Torah have to spell out that if he doesn't undergo the process, so he won't achieve purification? Is that not obvious? It's Tzarich. This has to be spelled out. Salka Daita Chamina, without the negative being spelled out, where the Torah says, and if he doesn't have the sprinkling on the third and seventh day, I would have thought, Saga de Chamina, mitzvahs hazo bishlishi ubishvi. I would have thought that, as a first choice, the right way to do the purification is a sprinkling on the third and seventh days of his waiting period. Vehecha de ovad bechad mina ovad. But if he would have done a sprinkling only on one of the days, that would have been enough. Kamash malon, therefore, it was necessary to spell out in the negative that it's not enough to have the sprinkling on just one of the days. Now we take a look at the Rashi, just a couple lines up from here. Saka de chamina, mitzvahs hazal begimel bubishvi. The best way, the proper way to do the sprinkling is on the third and seventh days. But if the sprinkling was done only on one of the days, that would have been enough. Now, how would I have had that Hava Amina? How would I have thought that? The beginning of the Pasuk is not stated in a conditional fashion. The Logsiv, it doesn't say Im Yischata Bo, if he gets the application on the third and seventh days. L'mashma mine ho im lo yischata lo yitar. Had it been stated in a conditional form, I would have been able to infer, says Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel, that if the sprinkling does not take place, so he won't have purification. Elo hu yischata bo. Rather, the form of the pasuk is, as we saw printed in the Gemara, that in order to achieve atonement, the defiled man is described as who. He will, who means him. He, the defiled person, gets sprinkling on the third and seventh day. So that left room for one to think. That it's simply a command, but not a binding requirement. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice we have a bracketed section. On the side, we have a note which reads as follows: Sugraim elu einom l'shem diluk. The purpose of this bracketed section is not that which we ordinarily do when we run into brackets, and that is to skip the section till that which skip and continue with that which appears afterwards. That obviously is not the case of here, because what happens after the brackets is a new Mishnah. So why the brackets? Elo laharois, our purpose is to show shistayim amasu matan ben Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Chanina. The give and take between Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Meir stops over here, where the brackets begins. And b'soch hasugrayim nimsa hemshich pirush apsukim. Within the bracketed section, there's a continued effort on the part of the Gemara to explain additional psukim in this section that deals with purification through the sprinkling of the red heifer ash water mixture. Rashi across from here, v'hizo ha-tor al ha-tomei v'chulei lomali lav le-rabbi chanina poruch. The Gemara within the beginning of the brackets is not a question on Rabbi Chanina. El divrei kol boi lo. It's a question that we can ask according to everybody. The Gemara. V'izo ha-tohor al-tamei b'yom ha-shlishi b'yom ha-shvi lo mali. What is the necessity of having that pasuk? After having seen above in Pasuk Yud Beis the sprinkling on the third and seventh days, is it not redundant to have Pasuk Yud Tes saying basically the same thing? So what do I need the information in Pasuk Yud Tes, which said V'izo ator al atomei b'yom ha-shlishi v'yom ha-shvi? It's derech, I need this Pasuk. Sa'kadai techamina shlishi limutei sheni. The reference to the third day means on the third day of his purification days, to not on the second. L'mutei sheni, to the exclusion of the second day. Shvi'i, l'mutei shishi. And the seventh is excluding the sixth. Because if he would have had sprinkling on the second and sixth days, to come in mei taro, you're reducing the number of days of purification, the seven required days. However, if he had a sprinkling on the third day and the eighth day, to call mafish bimei taro, there he's adding an extra day of purification. Emo shap yerdomi. I would have thought that's acceptable. Call mashmalon. So pasuk yutes tells me no, that is unacceptable. It has to be on the third day and the seventh day, not third day and eighth day. Pasuk. Another pasuk that needs clarification. V'chito b'yom hashvi'i loma li. And chito b'yom hashvi'i, what you find as a continuation of pasuk yud tes. What do I need that phrase? You just said at the beginning of the pasuk that v'isa ator ala tome b'yom hashishi b'yom hashvi'i, sprinkling is done on the third and seventh day. So what's v'chito b'yom hashvi'i adding? It's derech. I need that. Sakadei techamina hanimili lekotchim. I would have thought that the necessity of the third and seventh days is to purify someone in order to enable him to partake of sacrifices. However, avol letruma b'chad nami sakya. But to enable a kohen who was defiled to the dead to partake of truma, maybe one sprinkling is enough. Truma is a lower level of sanctity than kodshim. Komash malon, hence I need the chito b'yom hashvi to tell me that even for truma, purification from defilement to the dead is not achieved unless there's a double sprinkling, one on the third day and one on the seventh day. As one goes through Rashi adds a number of more details, additional details that we didn't explain in the Gemara itself, but for our purposes we've sufficiently explained what the role of these additional psukim are. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.